I don't know your attitude to work. I don't know what work you engage in. As I said at the beginning, work doesn't have to be paid work. Anything that you put your hand to that produces something that is fruitful. It may be that you volunteer somewhere. Maybe it's that you knit things that you pass on to friends, babies, or whatever. Whatever it is that you spend your time doing to produce something, whatever it is. I wonder what your attitude to that is, because I think in this Exodus reading, we get two types of work, or two attitudes to work, which I want to explore a bit and ask again, what does it mean to be people of God in work? What should our attitude to work be? What should our attitude to the produce that we produce be as the church and as people of God? In the reading, if you could just bring it up, Tom, we've got this important saying right at the beginning, this important verse. The Israelites were fruitful and prolific. They multiplied and grew exceedingly strong, and so that the land was filled with them. Fruitful, multiply, filled. Fruitful, multiplied, filled. It's a famous verse in the Bible that comes slightly before Exodus, at the beginning of the previous book, Genesis. So after God creates all these wonderful things, as Tom told us about his work, God creates all these wonderful things, says that it's good. Then he creates human beings, and he asks them to be fruitful, to multiply, and to fill the land. This is what human beings were designed to do and to be, to take all these good things of creation, and human beings were asked to be fruitful, multiply, and to fill the land. They're also asked to subdue it, to be stewards of it. This is the work that God has given to us human beings. Each and every human being, God calls to be fruitful, to multiply, to fill the land. What does that mean? What might that look like for you to be fruitful, to multiply, fill the land? Here in Egypt, in this Exodus reading, the Israelites, God's people, move into Egypt. And it says that they are fruitful, that they multiplied, that the land was filled with them. They are doing what God naturally wants them to do. I don't think they were particularly going, right, we're going to work really hard and we're going to stress and strain about it. I think this is just a natural thing of being God's people, that God will help us in our work. If we are doing God's will, that we will be fruitful, we will multiply, we will fill the land. It will be a natural part of being in God's will. But when they are fruitful, multiply, and fill the land, there are repercussions. The Egyptians suddenly get a bit worried. They're like, hold on a sec, they're going to be more fruitful than us. They're going to multiply more than us. They're going to be bigger and stronger than us. And we are afraid of that, so we're going to exert our power to try and minimize that, to squash that, to stop them from being fruitful, from multiplying, and from filling the land. We're going to try and stop them. We're going to oppress them. We're going to put on hard work. We're going to impose upon them labor, which they will not be fruitful in. They will just sweat and toil, and nothing will come. They will just work and work and work, and they will not be fruitful. They will not multiply, and they will not fill the land. In fact, the opposite will be true. We're going to impose upon them hard labor, because the Egyptians dreaded the Israelites flourishing and growing. Here at St. Peter's, we have a vision to become loving, witnessing, and growing people. Now, growing in what? I want to say that we want to grow in three areas equally valid and equally important. One, we want to grow in relationship with God, in our discipleship. We want to grow in our Christian faith. Two, we want to grow in our impact with our community. We want to be able to bless our community more and more. We want to grow in that. We want to grow our impact on our community. And finally, thirdly, we want to grow in number. We want more hands to work at this task. Those three, equally important. There will be some repercussions. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But, Tom, next slide, please. The interesting thing about the Egyptians is that they forced the labor upon the Israelites, but the more they oppressed them, the more they multiplied. So even with the forced labor, even with the work which is not what God wanted his Israelites to do, the slavery and the enforcement, and even with that, God still worked through them and made them fruitful, multiply, and fill the land. I don't know what your attitude to work, whether you feel you're in forced labor, that your work is just hard slog with very little payback, very little fruitfulness. Don't know if that's your attitude to work, or whether or not you feel, as we sort of heard from Tom, do you know what, I'm doing what God is asking me to do, and therefore you get a sort of buoyancy about it. I don't know where it is, but what I want to tell you is that either way, God can still make you fruitful and multiply. How? I think it's about our attitude to who is giving us the work. What is our primary employer? Sure, if you feel that your employer is your earthly master, and that is your first port of call, and they ask you to do hard work, work long hours for very little pay, then you can sort of begin to feel a bit enslaved, a bit labored, a bit in drudgery. But if you were to consider that your primary function on this earth is to work for God, to do things for his will, then reading the scriptures as to what you've got to do, love mercy, act justly, walk humbly with our God, to do these things of loving others, of blessing others, of giving to others, being generous to others, then suddenly the work that you actually do in order to do that, be it in an office, be it out and about, be it in the care profession, whatever, if you suddenly go, I am doing this for the Lord, then the attitude suddenly becomes, actually, we could be fruitful because we're not actually looking for the salary, per se. Maybe a benefit, but actually we're looking for other things. My mum was a care assistant in a hospital, private hospital, with a Christian ethos. But it slowly began to lose its Christian ethos whilst more and more professional, secular professionals came in and started to manage it. Now, it managed it into decline and it started to stop being fruitful and multiplying and growing in any way. These secular professionals imposed upon it values that didn't really work and it started to dwindle. And my mum, throughout her employment, she was the last person in the building as they walked out and closed it down and it became bankrupt. Throughout her time there, she would always stand up to the employers and say, I will do my job as you are asking me to do it, but my primary employer is I am here because God has called me here and I am going to do God's work here. And it happens that my job description, I think, fits with that. So I can do what God wants me to do and do what you want me to do, and that's fine. The moment it becomes a fight between the two, there's no contest. You can sack me if you like, but I'm here because God wants me. The problem was that my mum was very fruitful. She multiplied and she filled the land. Everyone wanted my mum to care for them in this hospital. So if she got sacked, there would be a big uproar. So the employer suddenly was like, she's a really good employee. She really serves this place faithfully. We can't do much. And I think they began to dread her. She's a dreadful woman. So this is the Exodus reading. So we're gonna worship again. We're gonna worship and turn our eyes back to the model of what it means to be human. Jesus Christ, who came to do the work of his Father. And he was fruitful. He multiplied. And now we look around the world and his followers are filling the land. And he came to serve, to work for the Lord. And we follow in his footsteps and we worship him this morning. So I'm inviting you to stand if you're able, and we're going to worship our servant King together. In this reading, we have Jesus with a crowd of people, and one person comes up to him and says, "Teacher, tell my brother to share out our inheritance." And Jesus says, "I'm not here to do legal disputes. I'm afraid. Sort it out amongst yourselves. Go back, encounter one another again, and work it out together." Then he turns to the crowd. And he tells them a story. And he says to them, "Take care. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed." And he begins his story like this. A rich man's land produces abundantly. In other words, a rich man is fruitful. Resources multiply, grows in his receipts. He is fruitful. And so this fruitful man harvests a lot of crops and grains, and he decides that he's going to tear down his barns to build bigger ones to store his harvest. What's interesting about this rich man's response is, if you bring it up, please, Tom, this is what he says to himself. He says to himself, "What should I do? For I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry.' I, me, 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 my, mine, it's mine. I've earned it, it's mine. My food, my crops, my money, my salary, my income, I've earned it, I worked hard, I did this, it's mine." Imagine if you were an Israelite back in Egypt in our first reading. And in the hard labor, it's hard work, and they worked hard for it. Imagine if they turned to the Egyptians and had the balls enough to say to them, "Hey, Pithom and Ramesses, that's my city, I made that. That's mine. Go away. That's mine. I worked hard on that. I did that. It's mine. Mine. Give it to me. Me." It wouldn't have happened, first of all. They would have been punished for it. But I wonder whether or not that is our attitude to what we earn. It's perfectly natural. You know, you work hard. You get paid to do that work. It then belongs to you. You spent the time, therefore you've been reciprocated with money, usually, or with some sort of produce. It's very easy to kind of give that mine and my. But if we are working for God, particularly in natural processes like harvesting crop, Did you grow the seed to the plant? Did you do that? Or was that not God? And who gave you that job? Who got you that job? Well, certainly, I worked really hard. I studied really hard. I did a lot of exams. Well, yeah, but you could have quite easily failed that. So what gave you the competency and the intelligence? Who gave you that to succeed in exams, to get you the job, to earn you the money? Who is that silent partner who has actually called you to the work? The interesting thing about that rich man, and I don't want to get into economics and different economic models, but that rich man, I'm willing to bet, didn't lay a finger on any dirt. I think that rich man paid laborers to do the work, but he was called a rich man, he was blessed, he was abundant and fruitful, that's not a problem. But his attitude was, it's mine, I did that. Well, yeah, there were other people involved, so why is it your crop all of a sudden? Well, I paid for the seeds. Well, that's fine. Okay, that's okay. But all of the I and me and my just goes to show that he just wants to build it up for himself. That who is in charge of him? Who is his boss? It's him. He, I'm my own boss. I work for myself. It's me. If we do what we were suggesting earlier in the Exodus passage of actually working for God, that when we are under God's will and we are working for God, we will naturally be fruitful and multiply and grow exceedingly strong and fill the land, then actually God is our employer. The good thing about God, different from the Pharaoh, is that God is quite generous with the produce, and he does share it with the workers. In fact, there is a parable that Jesus teaches where maybe God could be judged as too generous. That someone who starts work in the morning and works all day gets a certain wage, and then the person who comes 3 hours before the end works for 3 hours and gets the same wage. Some people would say that's bad economics and God is a bad employer. But no, God is a generous employer. God is generous to his workers. We do what God has naturally called us to do. We will be fruitful, we multiply, and we grow exceedingly strong. Maybe not necessarily financially, but we are fruitful. We get a sense of a job well done, and God blesses us with a spirit of resilience, spirit of hope and of joy, a spirit of self-control and gentleness and goodness, kindness. We grow in our discipleship and our impact and our influence. The interesting thing is that the my's, as you can see on the screen, my crops, my goods, my barns, and then at the end, my soul. I will say to my soul, I own my soul. My soul is mine. But God comes in and says, you fool, this very night, in the translation we had, your life will be taken. It's exactly the same word. You fool, this very night, your soul will be taken from you. Who by? By God, who actually owns the soul. So my soul isn't owned by this man, it's owned by God. The same is for the crops and the barns and everything else that we have is God's. We are stewards. We are called to be stewards. God created all things before us. We came along and he said, be fruitful, multiply, and fill the land. Be stewards of this abundance. It is not yours to own. You don't own anything. But I gift to you things to use for your benefit, for your fruitfulness, for your flourishing, for your growth. I give you this so that you can grow. And he gives it to us as individuals, and he gives it to us as a church, as his body here on earth. And how are we growing? In our discipleship and in our faith and in our love for God, in our impact and influence in our community and in number. We are given resources not to own and possess, but in order that we would grow exceedingly strong. So that's garden, that's work. Let's move closer in and look at cloister. Next slide, please. Cloister is a place of encounter, as I said. And I want you just to cast your mind away from work a bit and to think about all of those places that you encounter other people. I wonder how generous you are, what it means for you to be a disciple and the body of Christ in these places of encounter. Staying with this Luke passage, where are the encounters? Well, it's actually, there's not many encounters. There's not much conversation that happens. Jesus encounters a brother and sends them away and says, go and really encounter your other brother. Encounter that brother. Go and talk out. Don't separate yourself. Encounter him. Meet him. Go and talk it through because I'm not going to do it for you. And then he tells this parable of a rich man. And as I've indicated, there's no conversation about the laborers who've helped him to harvest his crops. No one mentions about who is actually going to build the barns. This is a rich man. He's got the money. I'm pretty sure he's going to use it to pay for other people to build the barns. But he sees it as his. It is all him and no one else. But he is fruitful and he has got this abundant possessions. Interestingly, if we could go up to the next slide, come. Jesus begins with it. Take care. Warning. Be careful. I'm going to just warn you about something which is very easy for all of us humans to do. Be careful. This is really important. Warning. Take care. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. This word greed is used 19 times in the New Testament. One of them is up there on the bottom. It's from Colossians, a letter from Paul to a church in Colossae. He gives a list. Put to death, therefore, whatever is in you that is earthly. Fornication, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed. Which he qualifies and says, greed. By the way, that's idolatry. Idolatry, worship. Worship of something. Greed is worship of something other than God. When you greed for someone, when you covet someone else's possession, something else that someone... suddenly our work, the thing that we work for, is to get that. Rather, to work to get God, to get closer to God, to grow in our relationship to God. If our work is about possessing something that someone else has, whether that's money, faster car, bigger house, nicer lifestyle, whatever it is, if we agree that is a worship of something other than God, Jesus says, be careful about that. Be careful about that. Because life, he says, is not about collecting possessions. The abundance of possessions is not about that. It's about growing in relationship to God. Because God is the source of all good things. And he will give you fruitfulness. He will give you hope and joy. And these things, these treasures of heaven. So be careful you don't start to get greedy for something that someone else has got and that you don't have. And then he tells the story of the rich man. Be careful about those encounters. When you encounter someone who has something that you don't have, when you encounter them, if actually in your heart you are not trying to meet that person, but you're actually trying to meet that person to work out how to get those possessions, be careful about those sorts of relationships. So I wonder what kind of people you encounter and how you treat them when you encounter them. Do you treat them with greed, with covetousness? When you encounter them and they're talking and they're boasting maybe about their life and their job and how successful they are or whatever, I wonder whether or not, like me, your heart begins to kind of just curdle a bit and you start to kind of go, yeah, I wish I could have that. I wish I could do that. I wish I could afford those holidays, or I could afford that. Suddenly I'm not listening to them. I'm listening to the temptation to go after those things. And the encounter is not fruitful. It doesn't multiply. I don't grow in relationship with them. And if anything, I grow away from them. Wonder how we treat those encounters. And to go back to that Exodus reading, again, in their fruitfulness, in their multiplication, the Egyptians treat the Israelites with that same jealousy and greed. They've got more power. They're going to be more powerful than us. We're going to dread them. Next slide, please. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them. Not deal generously with them. Let's not befriend them. Let's not get to know them, and maybe they'll share this fruitfulness with us. No, we're going to deal shrewdly with them. We're going to be clever and snide. We're going to deal shrewdly with them. And they set taskmasters over to oppress them. We're going to take away their freedoms. We're going to take away their joy. We're going to take away their hope and their love and their gentleness. We're going to take that away. And became bitter. The Egyptians became bitter. Their hearts curdled within them. Does that describe any of our encounters, any of our relationships with other people? Because if so, Jesus says, be careful, take care about that. Is that really what you want to focus on? The word taskmaster just makes me think of the TV program Taskmaster. Put up your hand if you've been watching Taskmaster, a couple of people. If you don't, it's very good. Greg Davis, comedian, with his assistant, little Alex Horn, who is giant, set comedians tasks, silly tasks, pointless tasks, and they've got to complete these tasks, and they get points at it, and they're going to earn the points from the taskmaster, who dishes out the points at his will. The interesting thing about Taskmaster is that part of the joy is that Greg Davis, there are technically rules to these tasks, but Greg Davis can give or take away those points at his will. He doesn't have to stick to the rule because he's the taskmaster. He set the task. He can do whatever he likes. And in the show, Greg Davis is probably more like the Pharaoh than God. He's not very generous. If anything, he's trying to destroy people because he gets pleasure out of that. When I was reading this passage, I was thinking, yes, the Pharaoh is the taskmaster. But there have been some, there's been 9 series now, or we're on the 9th series now. There have been some contestants who don't care about Greg Davis and his points. They don't care about the success of the task. They just like doing the task. They just enjoy doing it, working out the problem, doing it. And then they kind of get to the studio and Greg goes, well, you didn't do very well at that. I'm not going to give you any points. And they're like, so? I had really good fun. Actually, I thought that was clever. I like doing that. That was a good task. Or, oh, I really struggled with that task. There's an attitude towards these taskmasters that we should adopt. Because we have a better taskmaster. We have a God who is generous. Who that no matter what we do, he wants to bless us. Because he wants to draw us into a relationship with him. Have we encountered God in our tasks, at work, in our labors, in our productivity? Because, final slide please, Tom. The more the taskmaster oppresses them, the more they multiplied and spread. Because it's not about the task. It's not about the work. It's about the encounter. It's about how they treated one another. They multiplied because they encountered one another in depth of relationship. Because their priority was not the resources, the things that they could collect, the possessions. It was about the relationship with the God who gives and gives and gives of his storehouse, of his barns, of his crop, of his benefit. He gives to you and me if we're willing to receive it. So, here are some questions to reflect on. First of all, what does it mean for us to become loving, witnessing, and growing people? Sorry, Tom, next one. Thank you. How might we become loving people, witnessing people, and growing people in the places that we live, at work and encounters? What might it look like for us to become loving, witnessing, and growing people in those places? At work, on the street, in the shops? What does it mean for us to be St. Peter's Church with that vision, with that focus, with that task, with that job in mind? What might it look like? And how might we do that? Second, Tom. What would it look like for us to be generous in these places of our lives? What does it look like for us to be generous in spirit and generous as God is generous with us in our workplaces and in the places of encounter? How might we grow in that? Not just as individuals, but as a church here at St. Peter's. What might it look like for us to be generous in our workplaces and in those places of encounter that we meet other people in? Because when you go to work, when you encounter someone, even as an individual, what might it look like to stop thinking of yourself as an individual earning your stuff and it's all about me, and actually start talking about us and we? What might it look like for, hypothetically, Tom to go into his meeting tomorrow thinking, I'm here with St. Peter's. We all know that Tom's going to be in meetings tomorrow. What might it be like for us to kind of go, right, how can we at St. Peter's impact those people? How might we be loving and witnessing to those people? How might we grow in relationship with those people? What might it look like for us to do that with Tom as our representative there? Or Patrick at the library? Or Sandy in her voluntary work? What might it look like for us to do those things and to be generous in those places together? I'm going to give you a few moments of quiet, then we're going to sing our offertory song. We're doing this sermon series because we're going to be reflecting on how we as a church, specifically, treat our resources. The resources that God has given us. The resources that he's given us, not just directly, but through one another. Through our work as individuals, perhaps, but we are working together. So how do we deal with our resources? How might we grow in our vocation to be living, loving, witnessing and growing people? We'll be talking about that next week and the week after. But it does begin with our attitude, with our heart, as to who are we working for? What are we working for? What is our task? And who is our taskmaster? So as we sing this offertory song, we're going to take up our collection to offer the fruit of our labor in whatever form that takes. Now, in this case, it will be financial. But I know that many of you give in other ways and at other times. But during this song, we're going to make our offertory. So in your heart, I want you to kind of be praying, right, God, what is it that you have blessed with me? And I'm going to offer it to say to you, hey, what do I do with this? What do I do with this gift that you have given me? Be it financial, be it time, be it skills, be it passions, whatever. We're going to offer it up during this song and say, God, tell me what you want me to do with this. How can I serve you to become even more fruitful, to multiply and to grow exceedingly strong, to fill the earth? How can I do that? And in a prayerful way, offer that in whatever way seems fit to you. So I'm going to invite you to remain seated for it. The words are going to come up on the screen. I'm going to invite David and Becky to now pass round the basket. If you want to give at this time, then please do. If you want to give financially at this time, please do. But take this to give in whatever way you want to give back to the Lord.